CBS News, I'm Dan Scanlon. After three in-flight engine shutdowns blamed on the cold weather, the Federal Aviation Administration is ordering pilots to warm up jet engines and make sure the aircraft is checked for oil leaks before takeoff. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr tells us,
by way of precaution, what the FAA is saying is before these planes can fly anywhere, the crews have to double-check and make sure there are no oil leaks. If the crews find any oil leaks around the engines, the planes cannot go anywhere until the planes are repaired.
The FAA order covers 120 U.S. commercial and business jets and engines used in commuter jets flown by Continental Express, American Eagle, and Trans-State Airlines. Operations at Reagan National Airport in Washington are shut down due to fog. Tara Hamilton is a spokeswoman for the airport.
You really have no timetable because you don't know what the schedule of the fog is. So we're in that unfortunate situation of having to wait for the fog to lift. I'm sure the airlines will be doing the best they can to get people out as soon as possible.
The Senate has the framework now to proceed with the impeachment of President Clinton. It provides for 24 hours of arguments each for House prosecutors and White House defense lawyers, including Gregory Craig.
We are optimistic, we are confident that the senators, once they see and hear this defense in this opening phase of the trial, will conclude that the articles do not justify or warrant conviction or removal from office.
Some of those defense arguments will be telegraphed, or more correctly, driven up to Capitol Hill Monday. Here's CBS News correspondent Mark Noller.
Under the summons delivered to the White House on Friday by the Senate Sergeant-at-Arms, the president, through his lawyers, must answer the impeachment charges against him by noon on Monday. It will be a written brief. It will, in effect, say the president is not guilty of the charges against him, and it will inform the Senate that the president does, in fact, intend to present a vigorous defense of his position to the Senate after the House prosecutors give their defense starting on Thursday.
Both Democrats and Republicans, by and large, were hailing the compromise plan for the Clinton impeachment trial. Each side put the best face on the plan, which was truly bipartisan and in marked contrast to the political partisanship of the House. A Times CNN survey of voters found half of those surveyed feel the president won't get impartial justice from the Senate. 41% said the Senate will act according to the Constitution. That poll also asked some questions about the political future of First Lady Hillary Rodham Clinton. Time White House correspondent Karen Tumulty tells us,
Mrs. Clinton's approval rating is now at an all-time high in our poll, which is 70%. When people were asked whether she should run for the Senate, they were almost evenly split on that question.
The Time poll found that Elizabeth Dole, wife of the former Kansas senator and presidential candidate, would hold her own against Vice President Al Gore if the presidential election were held today. Neither Dole nor Gore fared well, however, against Texas Governor George Bush. This is CBS News.
Home, this is my home, my haven through the years. Life, I've lived my life, and now my time is near.
You know, I think the hospice team helped Mike do what he wanted to do, and that was to live like he always had. He'd have files brought to the house, he'd do some work on the telephone, and actually he was able to do a lot when you think it just wouldn't be possible.
Hospice helps the terminally ill spend their last days at home. It's a special kind of caring, a loving way of dying. Call the National Hospice Organization, 1-800-658-8898. 1-800-658-8898.
Let me hold on to my family. Let me hold them here at home.
I wouldn't have chosen a different route because we lived out every wonderful little minute.
Let me hold them here at home.
In San Francisco, some hoopsters are getting a dose of tough love. We get the story from Bob Butler of CBS station KCBS.
When the school year began, Richmond High School coach Kevin Carter had his players sign an agreement. Keep their grade point averages at 2.3 or better, or he'd suspend their season. Well, they didn't, so he did.
This drastic step was taken out of love for these young men, not because I want to punish them or anything like that.
Senior captain Chris Dixon says this is really tough love.
It lets us, the team, know that he cares about us as a team and as a person to go in and get our education on before we even look about being the next Michael Jordan or Shaq or anything of that nature.
The players say getting their grades back up will be a slam dunk in time for the season opener on Tuesday. Bob Butler, CBS News, San Francisco.
A new study shows the number of immigrants living in America has nearly tripled in the last quarter century, up to 26 million. Dan Scanlon, CBS News.
Good morning. I'm speaking to you today from Solidarity House in Detroit, Michigan. where for more than half a century, the members of the United Auto Workers have led the fight to improve the lives of America's working families. I've come to America's industrial heartland to talk about what we must do to strengthen our workers and manufacturers for the 21st century. Over the past 6 years, we've created the longest peacetime economic expansion in American history, with 17.7 million new jobs, the lowest combined unemployment and inflation rate in more than 30 years, the highest home ownership ever. Wages are going up at all income levels, and finally, the rising tide of our economy is lifting all boats. But today and in the years to come, America's prosperity depends upon the world's prosperity. In our new global economy, a financial crisis half a world away can be felt on factory floors here at home. For more than a year, a recession in other countries has forced them to cut imports of our goods, from cars to computers to jumbo jets, and to boost exports of their own products to our shores. After years of double-digit growth, U.S. manufacturing exports have slowed, and that's led to thousands of layoffs. These developments cause no small amount of concern. With millions of American jobs depending on foreign exports, we must help manufacturers find new markets and attract new customers for our goods overseas. That's why my next balanced budget will include a $108 million initiative to spur nearly $2 billion in additional U.S. exports, which will sustain or create 16,000 high-wage American manufacturing jobs. We'll begin by boosting our support for our Import-Export Bank, which currently finances 10% of all U.S. capital equipment exports. For every dollar it spends, the bank generates some $16 in American exports. By expanding credit, we can foster billions of dollars in exports that might have been deferred or canceled due to this financial crisis. We'll also expand the Department of Commerce's efforts to help small exporters to sell their goods in emerging markets, such as China, Latin America, and Africa. And we'll help developing countries establish a legal and regulatory infrastructure to make it easier for our firms to export. Most of all, we must ensure that the new global economy works for working people. Working families around the world must be able to exercise core labor rights, benefits from legal standards for fair pay and reasonable hours and safe working conditions, and improve their lives through unions, just as generations of Americans have done through the UAW. The United States supports the International Labor Organization in its efforts to advance core labor rights, rights that are crucial to building a strong and stable global economy. That's why, in my balanced budget, America will provide for the first time ever up to $25 million to create a new arm of the International Labor Organization to work with developing countries to put in place basic labor protections, safe workplaces, and the right to organize, so that workers everywhere can enjoy the advantages of a strong social safety net. We hope all countries will adopt and enforce the ILO's core labor standards, and that developing countries will accept the unique assistance of the ILO. And I encourage other nations to join us in helping the International Labor Organization and insisting that trade and investment agreements reflect these core principles. Today, in the rooms and hallways of Solidarity House, you still can hear the echoes of the voices of the men and women whose sweat, energy, and vision lifted millions into our middle class and transformed America into the world's greatest force for peace, prosperity, and freedom. With them as our guide and our inspiration, we can and we will harness the power of our new global economy to build a bright future for all our people in the 21st century. Thanks for listening.